Gang, we all know that a premium Spotify subscription gives you access to millions of songs and thousands of podcasts, but did you know that a premium Spotify subscription also gets you access to tons of audiobooks for free? It does, gang. Listen to great books like Storyteller, the Dave Grohl memoir, or Life by Keith Richards, or The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. Listen, there's all kinds of books on there. There's fiction, nonfiction, self-help, anything you're looking for, man, they got it, and you can listen to it for free. Just go to Spotify.com or download Spotify from your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts, and now audiobooks available with your premium subscription. Spotify.com. Let's get down. Hey, gang, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of How Did I Get Here? I know you have a lot of choices out there, and the fact that you're listening to this episode right now is not lost on me, so thank you. I'm not sure what platform you're listening on, but whatever platform you're on, give us a follow. And if you like what you hear, leave us a rating. It takes just a second, and it means the world to me. Plus, it really helps the show. So thank you in advance. And remember, the last 100 episodes of How Did I Get Here are available on all streaming services. Now, enjoy the show. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. Man, I had a really good weekend. I had a photo shoot with Happy Land, the band I'm in with Kimmy Rhodes and Gabe Rhodes and Harmony Kelly and Sean Pander and John Chipman and Louis Rhodes. We did a big-ass photo shoot on Thursday. Actually, two photo shoots. One in the afternoon at Kimmy Rhodes' recording studio, which was really, really fun. And then one that evening, Thursday evening, at the Austin Rodeo Fairgrounds at the carnival there, which was super fun. We just walked around, kind of gorilla did some shots, like jumping into booths and stuff. And be like, hey, what are you doing here? We're like, quick, take the photo. It was really, really fun. It was an adventure. And the photographer, Jamie, whose last name I never even got. She was so fun and so easy to work with. I can't wait to see these pictures. If these pictures turn out as great as I hope they did, and it was that easy to do, this lady is just probably one of the easiest photographers I've ever worked with in my life. I know that that may not mean a lot to you, but it does. Like sometimes photo shoots, it doesn't seem like they're arduous, but they can be arduous, especially one that long. One that starts at like noon and finishes at 8:30 at night. That's a lot of fucking like posing and standing there and doing stuff. But she made it interesting. She made it easy. She didn't make you stand still and do a bunch of stuff. She'd just be like, hey, do your thing. Give me some energy. You know what I mean? And that's all she did. Like, hey, give me a little bit more. And you'd give her a little bit more. Hey, give me some more animation. Give her a little bit more. She didn't make you stare at the sun for fucking 45 minutes and go blind and all, you know what I mean? Like all those kind of things. Or stand in some weird position that's awkward that you don't normally stand in. Everything was very easy, very fun, very organic. I cannot wait to see the photos. Then Friday, Skyrocket, we played at Sam's in San Antonio. And gang, we had our biggest show there since the return after the pandemic, since summer of 2021. I mean, they had to open the garage doors. The crowd was spilling out into the patio. It was fucking great. The crowd brought this incredible energy. I mean, incredible energy. They were very happy to see us and very ready to commune in the with the great spirit of rock and roll. You know what I mean? So they came in and they had that energy. We get that energy from them, double it, and send it back their way. It was like this symbiotic convergence of energy that turned into this giant celebration of music. And that is just what I live for. It was really just a beautiful, beautiful night. I know it sounds ridiculous when I'm saying it, but I'm dead serious, man. It was a beautiful, beautiful night of music. Great time with my friends. And Saturday, I don't normally do podcasts over the weekend, but my old friend Jesse Dayton is in town for a little while. He's been on tour with Samantha Fish. They put a record out called Death Wish Blues last year. And he's been on tour for like 14 months already on this record. It was nominated for a Grammy. He put out this record, Bow Monster. We've been old friends for a while. And we were like, hey, why don't we hang out? Let's do Saturday. You know, he came in, we did an hour and 45 minute conversation. You'll hear that in a few weeks. Fucking great conversation. He's got a brand new record out called, coming out called Hard Way Blues. There's The Hard Way, which is an EP that's available now, which has songs from the record, The Hard Way Blues, produced by Grammy Award winning producer Shooter Jennings, who was on the show last July. Great, great, great conversation. Always great to get to hang out with my old pal, Jesse Dayton. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Fantastic show. If you live in Texas, you may not know this band, but if you live in upstate New York, you may not know this show. So just for those of you that are new to the show, my name's Johnny Gowdy. I'm a musician. I live in Austin. I do this podcast where I talk to other musicians. And for those of you that live in Texas that may not know today's guest, Driftwood, this band is incredible. They have a brand new record called December Last Call that just came out just this last Friday. As I said, this is an upstate New York Americana band. I have a co-founder, Joe Kohler, on the show, and violinist and vocalist Claire Byrne on the show. Fucking great, great record. I can't even begin to tell you. I got it like from their publicist. I go through those things and I listen to them when I try and listen to them when I'm in a good mood, so I don't say no right off the bat. But as I put this record on, I just left it playing and I answered the publicist and I left it playing. I kept on listening to it and then I ended up starting it over. This is a really great record. You can file it under like bands Americana level, like the band. Now, Driftwood is celebrating their 15 years as a band and as this beautiful communal friendship. The founders, Dan Forsyth, who couldn't make it on the show, and Joe Kohler, who is on the show, they started playing together in junior high, and they played all different kinds of music. And then all of a sudden, they came across this sort of organic roots music. Joe started playing banjo, and Driftwood started off as kind of like a bluegrass band. But as time has gone on, they have slowly progressed into a more like Americana rock and roll band, more like the band. Less sort of like traditional bluegrass and more like a singer-songwriter, rock and roll, great choruses. These songs are fantastic. And these songs, like they go back and reflect their life together from the time that they were kids, you know, songs that are documenting their childhood memories to like navigating parenthood now as adults. Really, really fantastic record. Really great conversation with Claire and Joe. They're really cool people. We have a great conversation about their own personal journeys as artists and as people, and Joe's journey with the band, and also the band. What was the name of the funk band? Oh, the Big Six. We talk about Joe's old funk band, the Big Six, that he had with Dan, the other founder. Great conversation, a lot of laughs. This is a great band. Check out December Last Call, gorgeous record. You're going to hear the song December Last Call, the title track from the record, and then you'll hear my conversation with the great Joe Kohler and Claire Byrne from upstate New York Americana band Driftwood. Let's get down. How you guys doing? I'm Johnny.
Hey, John.
Hi, John.
Okay.
Your record, December Last Call, which I guess comes out later this month, is fucking great, man. You guys are an awesome band.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Yeah, I get stuff from publicists all the time, and I click on the link, and sometimes you're like, oh, sorry, I'm going to pass on this one. But this one, like, I just really loved it. I actually started listening to it on the regs, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you got a fan.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank man. You. So this record is the first thing you guys are putting out since 2019, that album Tree of Shade, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, what was happening was you guys got some really great traction going into the amazing music year of 2019 when we all sang into our phones for a year.
Yeah.
At least you guys play a style of music that works with. Did you do that? Did you live stream shit? Or did you just go like, fuck this and get out of it?
As a band, we said we took that route. We were like, okay, you know what? We need a little bit of a break. We did like maybe one, I think we put together one kind of like live stream thing. But amongst ourselves, we all did live streams, and that was cool. It was a really great chance to, at least personally, challenge myself to, you know, get better at playing the guitar and carrying my own music without Joey, right. Which was scary, but it was good. It was good for me.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, same experience. You know, it just felt so wild to not be on the road. And, you know, like you said, like things were really starting to fall. We were selling out all these venues and things were really happening. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, we got to shut down for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then so it's like, but, I, you know, it's funny because, you know, it's that sort of double-edged thing where, you know, I ended up putting out a solo record and doing regular live streams weekly, and ended up really enjoying it and learning a lot. And it was something that I always wanted to do, but kind of, you know, that sort of thing that like, it wouldn't have happened any other way. Like I've always wanted to do a live stream. I was aware of them, but then it was like, well, now I have to. So sort of embrace it, doing it every week. It was super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So when you got back together, after everything opened back up and you started working, you did this record in your basement or someone's family basement?
Yeah, my basement. It's been the sort of main hub for Driftwood since the beginning of time. And it's evolved quite a bit, and it's sort of built around Driftwood and for Driftwood in that sense, for recording. And so, yeah, we did it in my parents' basement. It's called Yellow Bag Studio.
Is it totally soundproof? Like there, you don't, it doesn't.
No, actually my parents love to hear the music emanating from the floor. Even if it's like 2 a.m, I'm like, I'll go upstairs and be like very apologetic. And they're like, what are you talking about? We love it. So, nothing but support from them.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I'm really lucky. Yeah.
Okay. So as I said, this record's great. It's a step, in a direction for you guys. I went back and started, once I read that, I went back and started like going back and listening to your older stuff. And I can see how it was a little bit more of like, almost like a bluegrass, folk situation. And now it's almost like an Americana band or something. Is that right? Is that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you were listening to like our early albums, you're going to get a much more, rootsy vibe. We never, ever actually fit into that bluegrass category. We tried for a little while, but, you know, the songwriting kept pulling us out of that category. And I think the songwriting has evolved over time, as it naturally does, and slowly continued to pull us further into an Americana band, indie rock band, indie folk rock band, if you want to get super specific. And I think you can start to hear that transition a lot, if you look, like in Tree of Shade, the Tree of Shade album.
Yeah.
That you can start to hear. Okay, they're going to, you know, December Last Call album makes more sense that, you know, do you hear that one? Sort of a transitional album.
So how long have you guys been together since like the mid-2000s?
You say what, 2009? Is that the...
Okay, so yeah, late That's... 2000s.
Yeah, I joined in 2008. And Dan and Joe, I mean, technically Driftwood started, what, 2005 or 2006, Joe?
Give or take. Yeah, I'm really bad at the chronology of it all. But yeah, somewhere around there, somewhere in the mid-2000s.
There really has to be, there's something to be said to the ability to stay together and grow together the way that you guys have. I've never done that.
Yeah, I think that's a common thread that comes up with everyone around us, the community we've built. Everyone's just, I think, really inspired and impressed by our ability to sort of the longevity. And we've even seen so many bands come and go, you know, along the, you know, as
of
the
course.
Years go by. It's just, it's kind of unnatural for something to exist this long. I mean, I've been playing music with Dan since I was in eighth or ninth grade, which is like insane, like 30 years
wow.
kind of thing. Yeah. Since high school.
What were you guys, okay. So when you guys got started, what were you doing then? Were you living in upstate New York?
We went to the same high school. We were in upstate New York, a little town outside of Binghamton called Chenango Forks. And I was Jimi Hendrix and he was Paul McCartney. You know, I mean, that's what we did. Like, you know, I played Star Spangled Banner with my teeth and then he would write these brilliant songs. And that was our band. I mean, we did a lot of jamming, a lot of like just psychedelic rock and all that stuff. And yeah.
So it did start off in a different place.
Right. It's kind of funny because it's sort of full circle now. I'm playing a lot more electric guitar, whereas early Driftwood, it was like strictly banjo. I recently, I think just this past weekend, I plugged in three of my instruments, the acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and the banjo. And if we didn't change the set, there was no banjo in the set at all. It was all electric guitar. But in a way, it's funny because a lot of folks don't know that. And they're like, well, I didn't know you played electric guitar, but actually, like, that's kind of where it all started.
That's interesting. What about, okay, so Claire, how did you meet those jokers?
Yeah, right. So I met them through a mutual friend who then a couple years later actually ended up introducing us to our bass player as well. Guy named Nate Marshall. He's a great, great musician. And I went to college with him, and he and his wife have a folk duo. And so they asked me to come on a short run of shows around New York State to just play violin with them. And he said, you know, we're going to be touring with this band Driftwood. It's just going to be two of the guys though. So maybe you can sit in with them too. So we kind of played band matchmaker. And so I did, I sat in with them a little bit. I was green as can be, Kelly Green. But it was great. And we got along really well. That was, you know, I think, probably the driving force behind getting back together and playing more shows. I mean, the music, that was a great match. But we just got along really well, and we all had the same taste in music and the same opinions about music. So
who was it that sort of took it, like went back to a roots vibe though? 'Cause you guys were young, and that, you know, that wasn't, there was a whole different, like, weren't you guys taking ecstasy and going to see Deadmau5 and stuff?
At that, of course. I mean, who wasn't? It was, you know, it's sort of a, I guess it's a fairly typical story, that Dan and I had a side project, called, you know, that became Driftwood. And it was just that he got a mandolin and moved out to Colorado. And then we just heard that, you know, we went to Telluride Bluegrass Festival and we're like, what the hell is this sound? Yeah. And then it was kind of, you know, the same, like Old Brother, Where Art Thou was happening.
Right.
You know, that transition from Garcia Grisman, you know, the Grateful Dead and that whole thing, like that was like, oh, there's this other like acoustic thing. And then this, the Bob Dylan bootleg series, we always sort of, I got a tape of that way back in the tape days. And, I gave a copy to Dan and we just wore that thing out and just were so blown away by the power of, you know, a dude and his guitar and like what that could do and how much bigger it was than like, say, our 60s funk band. You know, it just, it had so much weight to it.
Is that, that's where you were at before you started? You were the other
we were playing a funk band called Big Six. You know, it was strictly funk. I mean, it was just funny that like, and then on the side, we did these little gigs. It was just easier to travel. You know, we weren't doing a ton of traveling early on, but it was like, it was just easier. It was like, these little, and it was just, we had this love for it that was a little different. And because of all those other influences, I think we kind of led us there. And then from there, it just blossomed into what it was, you know, what it became.
One quick question, 'cause I'm sure whoever's listening is ears are burning. Their ears are burning. What was the name of the funk band?
Oh, we were called the Big Six. And, the Big Six.
Oh, the Big Six. Okay.
Like the number six. Yeah, but there were seven of us. And so I don't know. I don't know why. I think just be so folks would ask questions, maybe. Be like, what?
Claire, did you ever have the pleasure of seeing the Big Six?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I went. I had one particular, I don't know if I saw you guys more than once, but the one night I remember was my birthday. And so, and it was an epic birthday that ended, you know, in your classic, I'm 22 epic birthday ways. So, but we had a really good time at Big Six. So
this is going to make you laugh, but, maybe a couple of days before my 21st birthday, Mine ended with me being carried out of a place that was downstairs. It's pretty terrible. But I know you
were. Yeah, I was definitely, I was throwing up in a parking lot.
Yes. Yes.
Glorious.
I'm 55 awesome. Now, so there's such a, like, I would even, at, like, you know how, like, I would go back and I would throw up all the times I did just to be back there.
Yeah. Nobody ever worded it that way, but yeah.
Yeah.
I would too.
There's a song there.
There's somewhere.
Yeah, they're a great time.
Somewhere a song nobody wants to hear. Okay, so right. You guys, once you put out that first record, though, you guys like hit the road regionally, because I see that you're in the middle of sort of like a giant 3-month thing of the Northeast and East Coast. So
That's
one of my favorite. Like on tours, like the West Coast, like I've always hated it, and I realized it after a few years of doing it, that the East Coast is just, you can do it and see things, and you're not in a van for fucking 14 hours before you get to your gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's an interesting thing. Yeah. You can get the whole thing done, you know, in a matter of weeks, really, on the East Coast. But, so that tour that I met Dan and Joe on, and it was a tour for us. It was a real tour. It was, Syracuse, Rochester, Ithaca, Buffalo. I mean, they were all like 45 miles apart.
Right.
But we were on the road, man.
Yeah. But those are bitching, because you can go back most of the time that night. You don't have to spend money on hotels. It becomes like an actual feasible thing, especially if you're a 5-person band trying to tour, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big point. And like, I think that was another sort of part of, like, we kept the overhead so low, and sort of like, you know, we were so aware of that, I think, just naturally. And like, I mean, the hotels wasn't even, we a lot of times just crashed on couches and, you know,
sure,
just your typical musician shit, you know, where it was like, you know, just somebody knows somebody in this area kind of thing, like sleeping under kitchen tables, you know, whatever.
How much, like when you're not like in the process of putting out a record, how much are you guys playing? Like, do you guys have, other work that you do or other things that you do?
Some of us do, have some like music teaching, private lessons, stuff like that.
Do you do that?
I'm sorry.
Do you do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm actually in the studio right now. I'll have some students coming in after we're done here today. But we're always on the road. We are like a constantly always playing band. We're not the type of group to really take too much time off. We actually had a few weeks off in January, and it was really nice. And I thought, I understand why bands would like go out, take some time off, go out, take, 'cause that constant on, off, which is what we always do, is a lot. It's a lot on your body and stuff, but we're a live band first and foremost. So playing shows is our bread and butter.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
I do a lot of, like, the studio is sort of my second home.
Okay.
I'm getting more and more into production, and I do a lot of, you know, local artists or people that reach out. I've been doing a lot of mixing, you know, things along that line. And then also occasionally teaching, like sort of dipping my toe back into that a little bit, just because people reach out and they want some lessons kind of thing. But,
are you teaching like banjo and guitar or teaching recording?
That's right. Mostly guitar now, but yeah, I have done a little bit of teaching in the production world, but not as much as I'd like to. I actually just really love that world. And it's just as endless as learning an instrument kind of thing. But mostly just a lot of mixing, production, and then yeah, guitar lessons for now. I mean, I was teaching basic piano and banjo as well, but don't have any students currently except for guitar. Yeah.
All right. In that, being able to tour around there, is there like there's a whole scene and like a circuit that you can do? I saw there was some place that I played. What's the place in Charlotte? The Cat's Cradle? No.
The Muse?
The Evening Muse, yes.
Evening
I played there. I love that place.
Great.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while now.
Yeah, it's a music first place, which is a really cool cool thing. The guy that runs it, Joe, I forget his last name, but he's incredible. I'm always super impressed by his ability to sound check on the fly. Is like impeccable.
Like during the first song on the fly?
Like so fast. Yeah, like you plug it in and he's ready. Oh, and you're like, what? And like he's pretty sharp guy. And obviously a music-centric place, you know. We played everything in between, right, where you play the restaurant that's, like, trying to be a venue, but it's not, you know, like, that kind of thing. Whereas, like, he gets it, you know.
Where do you play when you play, like, New York City? Where do you guys play there?
That's funny that you should bring it up. We played on Saturday in New York City, and we hadn't been there since before the pandemic, actually, but we played it was kind of a restaurant trying to be a music venue, but we have played Mercury Lounge. I mean, we've done all of them. You know, what's that big one that they have, like, a whole bunch of shows rolling through each night?
Living Room. We used to play The Living Room. Brooklyn Bowl, yeah. We never played Arlene's Grocery, I don't think, but that was close by. I think we're still looking for a spot. We're thinking Brooklyn Bowl next time, because we just played Hill Country Barbecue.
Oh, yeah, and played there.
It was cool. It was all right, you know, but I think that it might be a better space. We also just came from Levon's Barn in Woodstock.
Right. How was that?
And it was, like, probably one of my favorite shows of all time. It was just beautiful. Just such a beautiful place, and there's so much history and mojo there, and it's very artist-centric, and, like, everyone there is just amazing. So, yeah, couldn't say enough things. It's just a different energy, right, than New York City, right?
Sure,
completely
of course.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that,
Did you guys ever make it? I have one of my very best friends that I grew up with, and we've been best friends since we were like 10, and he's actually my guitar person. He would go with his wife when Levon was alive and go to those shows. Were you guys ever able to make it while he was alive?
No.
Can you see?
Oh. No.
Yeah. And you know, we're all just such huge fans of his music and him as a person too. So I think that almost makes it even more special to finally be there. And not even just to be there, but to actually be allowed to play our own music in there. You feel like hallowed ground in there. It's sacred.
Right. It's like playing the Ryman or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. I would say that when I was listening to your stuff yesterday, like out walking my dog, I was getting heavy band vibes, like you guys are definitely kindred spirits with that band, the band.
That's an amazing compliment. Yeah, thank you. I don't know how conscious it is, but it's funny because there is sort of that upstate connection, you know, where I feel like we're sort of, you know, our roots are the same in some way, even though they're a little different. We're a little ways apart, but I definitely feel and hear the connection for sure.
There's something that feels so special about that area. I've gotten to play a couple of private events up there over the last like 6 years. That area is just, it's beautiful. It's lush. It's the opposite of the city, which is you can understand how people get away for the weekends. Is it weird like living there though? Because it is kind of, there is like nobody get mad at me, but there you can get to some places and stop off for some gas and there's like a backwoods vibe like we have here in Texas. Like I live in Austin, which is a totally normal city, but you drive an hour out of here and it's like, you know, Trump 2024 flags everywhere and like, people with guns.
Yeah, we definitely have that. And people are always surprised, I think, that, you know, it's New York, right? It's a liberal state. But you know, you get all kinds of people everywhere you go.
Yeah.
So we definitely we definitely live in an area that maybe leans red even, but you find your people.
Yeah, of course. Of course, it seems like, Joe, you were raised in a household of what I think of when I think of like upstate New York, like hippie parents, like, oh, no, leave your studio in there. Oh, it's cool if you play in the middle of the night, man. It's just great to hear you play music. I had a mom like that.
Right. Yeah. I'm just forever grateful. My dad has since passed. But yeah, I don't know. You know, they weren't necessarily hippies. I remember my dad sort of, he saw everything. He just saw it all, honestly. And I remember at one point he like kind of pulled me aside. He's like, there's nothing you can do that I haven't done. I'm like, don't forget that. I'm like, oh shit. Like, what does that mean? You know? But it was comforting in some weird way too. It was like, okay, I can like tell this guy anything or he'll understand anything kind of. But yeah, I mean, just nothing but support. And it was a nice balance of like, we're close to Binghamton, so you got a little bit of the city kind of feel, but then we were out far enough to where it was like, oh, you know, there's a lot of nature and a lot of woods and a lot of just general laid back sort of artsy folks and people to connect with on that level for sure.
What about you, Claire? Because the violin, that's not usually an instrument that a kid asks for. Like, hey, I want a violin. You know what I mean?
That's true. Although I'm thinking of a private teacher of violin students, I get a lot of parents that are like, hey, my kid wants to play violin. Do you have any openings? So kids do, they are interested. But for me, my dad is definitely a hippie. So he just like, it was like one of his goals as a parent was to like get all the right music into my ears. Right. And, he's a huge influence on me. But I was in elementary school, and it was just the first instrument that they offered us. We were in third grade, and they're like, listen, you can play the violin this year, and next year you can play, like, any band or orchestra instrument, or you could sing in the chorus. And I was just like, I'll give it a try. I wasn't super into sports or anything. I didn't really have any, like, extracurricular activities. And I don't remember even thinking twice about it. It was like autopilot immediately. I was just, yep, I'll give it a try. And then it came naturally to me and I really loved it. So just went with it.
Do you remember the moment like when you connected with it, when you were like, oh yeah, I want to do this. Like, do you remember that? Was there a moment where you were like, this is who I am, is a person with this instrument under their chin?
Yeah. There are multiple moments. I really wanted to pursue a classical career. I had this dream of playing in the New York Phil for years when I was like in high school. But I got bit by the fiddle bug and met these guys. But even prior to that, I had a couple of experiences. One was watching Mavis Staple play with the band. I was watching the Last Waltz. And I like 20. And then around the same time, 19, 20, my parents took me to see Asleep at the Wheel.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And both of those experiences, which is interesting because they're really different types of music, had me like crying, literally tears. Like, I got to do this. Like, wow, that has moved me so much. I want to be in that person's shoes. I got to do this.
Who was the woman?
And that was
sorry. What'd you say?
I was just going to say that was before I met Dan and Joe. So I don't know how I would have pursued it or if I really would have ever had the guts to do it. But man, I remember being really emotional and just super, super moved by it.
Wow. Who was the, do you remember who the woman was? It was a woman playing fiddle with the Sleep at the Wheel, right?
What's her name? I don't remember her name.
Elizabeth McQueen by chance?
It's like she was kind of like the Sleep at the Wheel fiddle player. So whoever sort of had their long run with them.
There was, man, that band's been around so long, dude. That band's been around since like 1971.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Definitely up in the front. And I had never really been exposed to that kind of music either. We'd never really heard any sort of Texas twang or anything like that. But, I just loved it. I just loved seeing them up there on stage. I loved the music. I think because she had a violin, whether or not, I don't remember even whether I was like, I want to play that kind of music, but it was just like, I saw a violin doing something than you know, sitting in an orchestra.
Right. And the thing also, like one of those things about classical music versus playing original music or being able to improvise within that music is the ability to have that freedom, which classical music does not afford you any freedom. Like there's no freedom. Like here's the shit. We've been doing it for 500 years like this. You're going to do it like that.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'll find myself with my students even answering questions like that. They'll be like, so, you know, they'll ask me a question about the music or why would this be in cut time and not in common time and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, some of the answers, I'm just like, man, it's just the way it is. Just play.
Beethoven said so.
Yeah. Was it me? Hey, how do you guys, so do all three of you guys write songs? Do you do writing together or do you come in with songs and present them to each other?
It's the latter. A lot of times we just bring songs in. And it's funny cause we've been doing, you know, a fair amount of these sort of interviews and things. And it's like, we've never really talked about the process. But somehow I think we trust that it happens, but yeah, we don't do a lot of co-writing. There is some like sort of arrangement things or production things that happen in the middle of recording something or playing something where it is an open sort of, you know, format where anybody can jump in and say, I think this could benefit from this, or, you know, maybe let's stretch this part out, or, you know, or sometimes I'll ask, you know, like if I've got like something I'm hung up on, I'll be like, hey, what do you guys think about this? Is this cool? Or, you know, and sometimes that's all you need, but yeah, not a lot of co-writing. A lot of it's done sort of personally and internally. And then we sort of bring it to the band and see what happens.
Was there like a learning curve emotionally about like to not get your feelings hurt or to hurt other people's feelings when they're bringing in the songs for the album? Cause that stuff can get kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just always nerve wracking. It doesn't matter how long you do it. I think you get a little more comfortable or confident with it depending on the song. Like sometimes I kind of know, or I feel real good about something and I'm like, this is what I want. But most of the time I don't. Most of the time I need someone to validate if I'm being 100% honest.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's scary. You know, it's just scary. It's like, we go around and we sort of just play the tunes that we believe in. And I think I was talking about this last week. I feel like there's a lot of trust within the group, obviously, and it's a necessity. And I think we kind of trust that, like, we've already vetted the tune. Like we vetted the tunes, you know, cause we all have a lot more songs than we actually play in Driftwood. So some of them kind of just get either put on a solo thing or just get lost on a hard drive somewhere. But the ones that we sort of present, I always feel like are the ones we think are gems. And we sort of all trust that amongst the group. Although we've never talked about that. I just think that that's what happens.
Yeah. It's interesting because that can always be, I co-founded a like four singer songwriter band, like a 7-person band with 4 singer songwriters. And we're still in the honeymoon phase. Like no one feels the need to get mad at anyone yet or resent anyone for anything. So that's good. But it is hard. It's hard to sort of have that balance. It's hard to find a bunch of people with a common goal enough to realize that somebody else might have the best idea in the room at that moment and champion it like they would their own. That's a very grown up thing to do. I bet that's changed from December last call from the first record a lot. Has it with you guys?
I don't know if it has actually. I mean, the first record, what was the first record? Oh, Rally Day. And I'm on a couple of those tracks. That's when I kind of was just coming into the band. And I remember very vividly, like, that was my first experience in a band. And so arranging and stuff, Dan and Joe had a lot of, like, suggestions and questions. Like, can the violin do this? Can you do that? Why don't you try that? Please do that. And stuff like that. And amongst each other, too. So I kind of learned a lot about songwriting and arranging and how a band works just watching them. But they were always had the same open vibe, and it's been the same kind of conversations since the beginning between them. And then my coming in as a songwriter and stuff, I just kind of, that's the flow. I'm going with that flow that works too. But I do remember thinking to myself, wow, these guys are kind of picky as far as like with the violin and stuff, because I was just thought I would just come in and play and it would be great. But they were like, oh, no, we'd like this and we would like that. And could you try that? And I slowly realized, wow, these are better suggests. This is better than what I would have done. These are good suggestions. And this is a good way to approach arranging. And so I learned a lot in that those first couple of years. And I know Joey did too when he came in. But I think that as far as how we do it now, it's pretty much the same. Except that maybe a little less is suggested and dictated. We just generally kind of play together and see what happens. And I think that's like less suggestions. We used to have these really formatted songs. They were really arranged and the parts were all really worked out. But the conversations around the songwriting, the arranging and stuff, the vibe as far as like everybody's, how anybody takes the suggestion from another person and stuff is the same.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's such a balancing act, you know, because it's like, I think it speaks to our longevity, because I think we're all aware of like, there needs to be some openness and some freedom for each individual, because we're such a unit, but we're also such big players in it. Like we couldn't switch out any one of us. The band would be totally shifted. Whereas I think like other bands, it's like, I don't even know if people notice that the drummer and bass player are different on this tour than the last, you know?
Yeah.
So I think for us, it's like, at least for me personally, like I have an awareness. I try to find that line. I mean, it's kind of like, it's funny as a, you know, more producer sort of role. I sort of see how far I can push them. And sometimes I'll push them a little farther than I think to get something, to see where their line is, where they're like, okay, like, I think it's okay or whatever. But I think, yeah, there is some openness and some trust and some respect there, where it's like, you want that person to bring to the table what they believe in. Otherwise they're not going to play it with any heart and soul.
Yeah.
And that's so essential to the overall feeling and longevity and just, you know, making great stuff.
Yeah. Well, so when you have a band, and obviously I know that you guys switched out a drummer, but it seems like, is that the only person that's changed in the band really? Yeah. There gets to be a point where the band is made up of, in this case, five characters that make up one voice, that you don't want to one character to dominate too much. Then it becomes less of the band and more of, you know what I mean?
100%.
Which is go ahead, please.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it's such a balancing act, but it makes some things a little tougher sometimes, because yeah, at least on the marketing side, or like when someone goes, what kind of stuff do you do? Just those simple, like one shot answers don't work. Whereas I feel like some bands have a very clear, like on the sort of marketing side, and the less sure, like interesting shit to me, it's like, I don't know. We're very open in that sense. And we have three or four now, like lead singers, you know, and that's like, so kind of like, you know, it's just, the signature becomes a little bigger and broader, you know, and sometimes harder to pin down. But at the same time, we've been together for a long time, and you know, and I love that aspect. Like the shows never get boring, and like the record got this other singer and then that singer, and the styles are so different, but they're all sort of, there's some synergy there as well. So it's a cool thing.
This record flows really well. Like, I mean, it's not like every song is so different. You know what I mean? You guys definitely have like your style down and your voice as a group down, so that when each person steps up to sing their song, it sounds like it's supported by the same people as the last song.
Cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Like as Joe was saying earlier, They're like, we only bring certain songs to the table. You're not just going to bring any song to the table. I know, at least personally, like, I'll write for Driftwood. I'll be like, okay, like, I'm going to write a song. It's going to be for Driftwood. So what? How should I approach it? You know, how, like, okay, I've already written a few songs that had that, you know, groove, or we could use this kind of groove, or these kinds of topics are really along the same line. That sounds a little too country. So I've thought about that stuff, and I think everybody thinks about that when they pick the songs they're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we've like grown together. You know, it's like, I compared it in another interview we did recently. I compared it to a marriage, and a really long marriage. Like, they kind of like, you know how like a really elderly couple, if they're married, they're kind of the same person a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, we are. We're not the same people at all, really. But as far as the band goes, like, we just have such a flow, and there's so much trust, and we know exactly. We kind of have the same thing in our heads when we're thinking about what the sound is and what we want and where it's going. We're definitely on the same page with that stuff.
That's beautiful, though. That's like that's what it should be. You know what I mean? If you're doing it right.
I think it's really rare, you know.
Extremely rare,
and it's like, I don't know how we found each other, you know. It's like, because I hear that from a lot of musicians, trying to find people aligned in that way is quite a challenge, and I've sort of never been in that boat.
I think fate.
That's
everybody has an ego, right? I mean, it's part of being a human, but in our group, everybody's really good about like setting that aside. So, like, you know, I said earlier, and it was in a joking way, this was 16 years ago, my thinking, wow, these guys are really picky, right, about what they wanted in their music. But I never like was like, I don't want to do that, this is how I play, no, I won't try that or anything like that. I was like, but, you know, okay, well, they really know what they want. And I also felt like if I ever were to say no or something, then I wasn't challenging myself. You know, so to just like always keep it an open book, and even if it was something in my head where I'm like, no, I can't do that, or like, no, the violin can't do that, it's like, actually, let's see if it can do that and find the outer limits of what a violin can do.
Yeah.
So
it's also like, it must be hard also. I know from having my own, this is a recording space that I'm in. You can't really tell, but there's instruments and stuff everywhere. But when you're doing something yourself and not on the clock at a place, like, there can be this really difficult sort of the letting go process to release a record, you know, and be like, okay, it's finished. Because you're there, you have time, you have all the stuff. You run into a saxophone player at the coffee shop and you're like, oh man, track 3 really needs that sax I was dreaming about. You invite the guy. So there's a way to never stop. And there's also sort of that fine balance of like making like a Queen record where these guys are going to like stab each other, you know, and it's going to take forever. You too, like wherever it takes forever, they're still recording while they're mixing and adding other shit in there. And then also like sort of the Ed Wood, do you guys know who that movie director was? Like super famous for making terrible movies. But his thing was kind of like every time they did a shot, no matter how it went, he'd go, perfect, let's move on. So there's like this weird balance, right? For you, especially Joe, in that how it's different to do your own band, to do Driftwood, than someone that's hired you to come in. You have a finite amount of time. You don't want to work for 17 cents a minute or an hour. So you got to do things in a timely fashion. But then when you're making your record, it's your passion, it's your songs. How do you handle that?
I have a lot of tricks. Tricks to stay out of my own way. I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, I found like time limits are just so powerful. Something as simple as saying, we're going to work on this until, you know, for 37 minutes longer. And then that's it. Period. Like, regardless, if I, you know, I've also, you know, over the years, we've learned to recognize, to one, trust yourself, which takes a long time. I mean, you always think sort of the grass is always greener. What if we had a producer? What if we've done all that now. And it's funny that we've come back to making our own records, But yeah, I just have tricks like putting time limits, making lists of things to try, and then making a decision, sort of working quickly, making decisions quickly in the studio and production side, I think is essential to creativity and capturing a moment. I've also discovered this thing recently about capturing the discovery on a recording. So
yes.
I don't want the take where, right? So like, it's like, you don't want the take where you sort of know what you're going to do. You want the one where you're sort of stabbing around and you just kind of found it.
Yes.
You think, you're like, okay, let me try that again now that I know what I'm doing. It's never that one.
No.
It's always the one on the way, right? So, yeah, so, like, that's kind of, like, those kind of things and trying to be able to see that as it's happening. But then you're also working with so many different personalities within the group. Like, our bass player, for instance, has this, you know, jazz mentality, which is beautiful, and I love it, and I embrace it. But, like, every take is so different. Right. Each one is like, you won't play the same thing twice, which is beautiful on some level. But then on the other side, you're like, well, why do you, you know, that one thing was really working. Like, why not, you know, lean into that? So you're sort of like managing those kind of things. Luckily in the digital world, we can comp things together. You know, so there's just little tricks like that, sort of knowing kind of what you're going for, having a checklist, time limits. We do a lot of breakout groups where it's like, just me and Claire, or just me and Dan, or
oh,
just
good.
Me and that seems to help too, because you get too many cooks and there's like a lot of
yeah, man,
right? You know, I mean, geez, it just turns into like, oh my gosh, you know. And I sort of recognize that after doing this a couple times, and you know, and even just the focus of having less people. But then at the same time, sometimes you get like, when you're talking about performance, sometimes it's really great to have like some other folks in the room, or like in a space to kind of like, you sort of, you know, break up the energy and you have a different experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
about, I feel like the,
sorry, go ahead.
With this record. Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like also with this record, sometimes if somebody felt like really strongly about something, and everybody else kind of maybe wasn't so sure yet, instead of like continuing to go down a certain path or something, I'd be like, all right, listen, Dan really digs that. Great. Awesome. Let's roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about with empathy towards like having a band in there when you're starting to mix. You know what I mean? Like, I remember in my 20s, the first time I encountered a person that's like, all right, I'm going to mix. Why don't you take off for like 3 hours and then come back? And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, trust me, dude, just get the fuck out of here, please. Because then the first time you're mixing a record for someone and you're just setting up the mixer, like, is that what the, hey, what are you doing with that kick drum? You're like, dude, I'm just trying to get it into play. You know that feeling? I can see it in your face.
100%, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like you have to go through that at least once or twice. I mean, on City Lights, which was another one we did in the basement in the Yellow Bike Studio, I worked myself sick on that. Like, I worked myself until literally I had the flu so bad that I gave this flu a name, because it was so such a formidable opponent. Like, it knocked me down, because and I did all of it. I made every mistake. You know, I remember editing something so much that I removed all feel from the entire song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was perfect, but it was had no. And so I ended up going back, you know, but it's almost like you got to go down that path. Sort of realize the balance.
Well, it was nice also to hear that you look for a magic in a performance and someone tried like the moment of discovery, as opposed to like that's the one thing about modern recording and modern music that I feel alienates me as a listener, is that people aren't capturing magic as much as they're carving out perfection now, and I'm not as interested in perfection as I am in magic.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's kind of like a cool thing about Driftwood. Even on the stage, we do a lot of things. We take a lot of chances. And I don't see that in a lot of bands in the modern sort of like upper echelon world, where it's like sort of mapped out, or the plane to click.
They're playing the tracks and stuff, yeah.
They have so much going on with the, you know, and I get it with the lighting rigs and the whole experience, but I mean, we do things where we literally have no clue what's going to happen. And sometimes we fall on our faces because of it. And we all get scared a little bit. And we'll be like, maybe we shouldn't do that. But then we'll try the next night. And it's like the best part of the show. So I think we kind of all embrace that. And I think that's important.
Yeah, man.
Both ends. Yeah.
I mean, that's, I guess we're kindred spirits in that way, that this is kind of what we're in it for, is that to be a part of the magic, to experience the magic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To ride the wave of magic. It's playing music and getting to play with people that you've played with for a long time, where you have that language with each other, an unspoken language that's just so beautiful to experience. Do you guys ever play, you guys ever played South by Southwest?
We have not, but we went to Austin. We played in Austin. I'm trying to remember where we played. It was a while ago. Really, it was a while ago. But no, we haven't done South by Southwest. We should, though.
Yeah. And if you ever come down here and play, please hit me up, man. I would totally come see you guys in a heartbeat. I really love your music. You guys are doing something really special. And people can find you guys by going to driftwiththeband.com. If you live on the East Coast, you're lucky because you can see them. If you don't live on the East Coast, then just go to their website and look at their videos like a weirdo.
Awesome.
Is there anything else I'm missing? Man, this record's great. December Last Call comes out on March 22nd. And seriously, you guys are on tour basically every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday until May, until the middle or end of May.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we got some new videos coming out soon. I mean, we're just doing the whole thing, right? We got new videos coming, a lot of live versions, in studio versions of these tunes. And we'll just be out there playing our asses off and just doing the thing.
Well, I look forward to meeting you guys sometime. You guys, hopefully you'll make it to Austin sometime soon. And do you guys play Americana Fest or like the Folk Alliance or anything like that?
Yeah, Americana Fest 2019 with Tree of Shade.
Okay.
Put our application in for this year. So we'll see. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck with everything. It's really nice meeting you. And this record's great. Everyone get out there and check out the singles Every Which Way But Loose, Up All Night Blues, and December Last Call, the title track from the record. Nice meeting you guys.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Honey, pleasure.
Cheers. That was Joe Kohler and Claire Byrne from upstate New York, Americana band Driftwood. Get out there and check them out. DriftwoodTheBand.com. That's where you can find them. What a great record, man. Check out December Last Call. It's out now, wherever it is you stream and download your music, all right? And hey, gang, while you're out there checking out driftwoodtheband.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, all the places. All the places. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday from the vault. I think next week we're dropping 3 episodes. As I said, the big Jesse Dayton episode coming up in a few weeks. All these great shows, all right? So, yeah, I hope you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. And hey, rock on. Let's get down.